I was dead from wrong, and I'll die in America.
Welcome to our group.
And this ought to show it right here.
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our Medical Tuesday broadcast with your host, our Colonel, Kimberly Purvis. Now, before we get on with our show, for those of you that are new, just tuning into and listening to us, be sure to check out our national Facebook page by typing in a search box, all capital letters, Fenders 7. Now, before you click on that join button, just know we expect all of our members and future members to participate throughout all we do here in the Defender 7. Because without you, there will be no Defender 7. Be sure to check out and subscribe to our website, all lowercase letters, www.defender7.com. On our website, you'll find that we have a store and a donate button. 100% of all sales from our store and any donations we bring in go back to our communities throughout all 50 states in the time of need. So please, by all means, purchase something from our store or hit that donate button. Help us to help you and your community in a time of need. We have a YouTube channel. Hop over there and subscribe. We're on MeWe. Click on Communities. Scroll down. Defender 7. Humanitarian American Patriot Group. Yes, that's right, folks. We are not a militia. For tonight's show and all the shows we do here on Blog Talk Radio, we really do enjoy when you call in and participate. That number to call, area code 914-205-5773. Too shy to call in? We also have a chat room, which is also live during our broadcast right here on Blog Talk Radio. So either way, hop in here, participate, tell us what you like, tell us what you don't like. Everybody's thoughts and opinions are always welcome, negative or positive. So come on in, chat with us, enjoy the show. Now I give you our host, you and Colonel Kimberly Purvis, and we have our major ass pain, Lorna Munson.
You know it.
Howdy ho.
Howdy hi.
She said hi to hold it. She said hi to the hoe.
Hi to the hoe.
And the Bobby's the hoe.
Lorna's a hoser.
Huh?
Lorna's a hoser.
Not.
Oh.
So how's everybody doing?
My arm hurts.
Good. How are you feeling?
Well, I'm going. That's about it. That's all I gotta say.
So why does my arm burn?
Huh?
Why does my arm burn?
What, did you get a sunburn?
No. No, it's only in the 50s and 60s. That's impossible.
Oh, well, you know, I don't know. Well, what the hell did you do?
I don't know. I was carrying my ladder around, and it's been screwed up for, like, almost 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Should you use your other arm?
Huh?
Should you switch it?
I did. I'm ambidextrous, or however you say that word.
Dextrous.
Yeah.
I went and saw my surgeon today, and they took my stitches out. Yay. And the PA screwed me over royally. I'm a little irritated. Before I had the surgery, the surgeon told me, he was like, oh, yeah, as long as you promise not to pick anything up, no pushing, no pulling, nothing to do with my right arm. I'm like, okay, cool. He's like, just see 2 or 3 patients, try not to do too much. Or I could drive around with the marketers to the different facilities or work in the office. I'm like, cool, got it. I'll have you know, I went to that office today, and I saw the PA, and that heifer put no driving on my work note, return to work. And I'm like, you do realize what I do for a living, right? And she's like, yeah, well, I don't think you should drive. So now I'm like, great. I cannot go 3 more weeks without working. And so my boss is like, so they said you could see patients but no driving. I'm like, yeah. Oh, that's okay, because our home health aide is out on maternity leave for the last few weeks before she goes out and has the baby. They're just going to have her drive me around.
Great. Now you're going to one-arm deliver a child.
No. See, I can drive, and I have been driving, just not too far. And so the heifer goes in the – she's not due until the end of October. Or mid-October. Yeah, she's not due for a couple more weeks. She was taking the last 3, and then she's taking a couple weeks after. I think she's doing hers half and half, you know.
Right.
But they got stuff for me to do in the office, but like med rec, you know, do all the medicine orders in and things like that that the office manager can't do because she's not a nurse, and the scheduler can't do because she's not a nurse. So I'm like, cool, I'll do it. And so I'm going to have to do it for 3 weeks, and then I go to Tennessee for a week, and then when I come back, then I'll have my release to work completely. And he'll probably still have some modifications, you know, no lifting still. And I want to have physical therapy for 6 to 8 weeks. Yay. 2 to 3 times a week.
Physical torture.
Yeah, physical torture is right. But, yeah, I mean, it's no big deal. I don't mind. I mean, it is what it is. And then they threw me for a loop. They're swapping me and another LPN around. I don't know what happened. There's one RN that works in the office, right? Well, she's one of the field nurses. You know, she's one of those RNs, the high and mighty, you know, the me, I kind of nurse, you know. She went and told the office manager, our boss, she said, can I have Kim as my LPN? And she's like, why? Because I think she's a kick-ass nurse, and she's great, and she does, you know, all of this other shit. And I'm like, are you sure we're talking about the same nurse? And I'm like, are you sure it's the same nurse? And she's like, yeah. She said it floored her too, because the nurse that she had was a great nurse. Don't get me wrong. All the LPNs in the office, we work hard, and we've had issues with the RNs. And so I said, okay, fine. So the cool thing is most of her patients are in 2 facilities. So I'll just have her drive me to one facility. I'll see, there's like 6 or 8 patients in one facility, and I'll just do it twice a week. And then the other days, I'll just work in the office, you know.
They don't call you Nurse Ratchet for nothing.
No, I'm Nurse Lady. Hey, you, Nurse Lady.
I said they don't call you Nurse Ratchet for nothing.
I am not Nurse Ratchet. Well, I might be Nurse Ratchet for a few patients because they're hard-headed as shit. And
they just enjoy your 10 personalities.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be the one I have who's a veteran. Yeah, I could see that. But, no, it's all right. I don't have to sleep in my recliner anymore. I could sleep in my bed. And so something I didn't think about, they told me not to take Motrin. And I was taking it instead of taking my pain medicine because I stopped my pain medicine on Thursday. I'm like, I don't hurt. Why should I take it? But my arm was swelling. So the next best thing is take Motrin, right? Everybody knows your NSAIDs, anti-inflammatory. Yeah, well, you know one thing I forgot about? When you have surgery, you need that inflammation process to heal what they did. And so they're like, stop taking them. I'm like, oh, goody. So I guess I'll take Tylenol for nothing. But, I mean, it doesn't do shit. I kept my pain medication for before I go to physical therapy. Because I ain't having that crap. But they showed me the pictures. And when she showed me how big the tear was, the one tear, the other tears, he didn't show me those because those were insignificant. Look at your soda can, right? When you open it, you know the hole that you where the soda comes out? That's how big the hole was in my rotator cuff.
Damn.
It was ruptured. But not from the bone. It was kind of like in the middle where it ruptured, like it tore a hole in it. And so he had me fix that, and there's internal stitches, and that's what my body is like. My body does not like stitches. It doesn't like anything. After the military, it's like, you're allergic to everything now. So they told me how he did it. They put through and they anchor it down, and that's how they heal it. And then come to find out, he told me, the right under the clavicle, that little part that goes right to your shoulder, they had to flatten it out because that's where the impingement was. And then, of course, the bone spurs and all that. But they showed me, and I'm like, it looked rough in there from the whole thing. I'm like, wow. I didn't realize that's how it looked. But do you know what hurts? And I believe this is what hurts on me. I did not know. He had to drill a hole I don't know if it was in the socket or in the ball. I think it was the socket. He had to drill a hole in it so the bone marrow can come out and kind of make a, because you can't replace cartilage. So I guess that's what it's supposed to take the place of. But the ball was smooth. It looked just like a cue ball. But the socket looked just like it was, oh, my God, it was horrible. So he fixed all that. So, yay, I'm good to go. Pretty cool. So now I just have to wait 4 more friggin' weeks and keep wearing this stupid sling. So, oh, my God, I hate it. I can't stand it. He's like, just try and keep the sling on as much as possible. I think it's kind of like he saw. Like, I haven't had the sling on for 2 days because I haven't done anything. I've just been sitting on my couch or, you know, and watching TV or whatever, and I haven't been using my arm, right? So he says, you know, you really need to keep your sling on. Why? What do you know? who told you? So I think he knows because I'm a nurse, and I think he knows that I'm not going to want to wear it. And so... I'm like, fine. Do I have to wear the pillow? He's like, yes. I'm like, fine, whatever. So now I'm like, I guess I'll do it. But, yeah, I got to keep it on for another 4 more weeks. So when I go to Tennessee, I'm like, woohoo. At least I'll have it when I fly. I'll have a good excuse to get on the plane first. I can board first. No. If you have a disability or something to keep you from – to slow down the progression of people getting on a plane, they'll let you on first.
Oh, they're only doing that for your 10 personalities.
Shut up. You know, I could have gone – you know, whenever I fly, I show my VA card, and it says 100% right on there, boom. And they're like, oh, go ahead, get on the plane. I'm not telling them what my disabilities are, please. I am not. That's not a reason to get on a plane early. I just hate how small planes are, and you don't have enough room to move, and people are assholes when they get on a plane. But I pick the seats in the back. You know, the two flights I'm taking are not very – they're not booked. So I'm like, cool. I went a couple rows back. So – but anywho. So we could do a real quick recap of the week. So apparently the death toll is over 100 people now in Florida.
Yeah.
From Fort Myers. 27 people died in a boat that capsized coming from Cuba to Miami.
Yeah, I saw that,
when the hurricane went over Cuba, 27 people died. That sucks, man. I'm like, you think you would have waited? So, you know. But, and there, I cannot believe how much they're politicizing this whole friggin' thing.
I know,
it's like, it's ridiculous. And friggin' that, oh my God, that so-called bitch we have as a vice president says, oh, only black people and poor minorities are going to get the money from FEMA. Oh, so your poor white people don't deserve it. Oh, okay. So the head of FEMA, I don't know if you saw that, the head of FEMA is like, no, that's not how it works. We don't care.
Yeah.
You know. But if you're a millionaire, you should be at the bottom of the list, honestly. In all honesty, if you're a millionaire, you should be at the bottom of the list. Let the people with the mobile homes, the camper that were living in campers, and you know what I'm saying? I mean, in all fairness, it should be like that. But, you know, there were houses that weren't even touched. This one house, on Fort Myers Beach, everything around it was demolished. The house is still standing. Kid you not, the roof is still on it, the siding is still on it, the foundation. They're like, they can't believe that whole house never got touched. Completely. I'm like, wow.
Right.
That's one of those stories you hear about the guy who was in a car accident. His whole entire car burnt to a crisp, except for his Bible that was in the back seat.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. I'm like, oh, wow. But I'm trying to think what else. And so I'm sure everyone knows about the three explosions and the Nord Stream pipeline and all that good, cool crap. And things are getting ugly over there. And I hope they don't let the Ukraine in to NATO. Because the moment that
they filed an emergency NATO application or some shit.
Yeah, he did 2 days ago. Here's the problem: if they accept him, World War III is in a full swing.
Yeah.
Because every NATO country has to help. I'm like, whatever. So, we'll see what happens in the near future. I want to go ahead and go over diet. So there's different types of diet. Now, everybody knows they have renal diet, cardio diet, low sodium diet.
Lorna needs to hear all of this because of her fat ass.
Oh, yeah. Because she's so gigantic.
Lorna needs to hear what? I am on a diet. It's called a seafood diet.
You see food and you eat it. I know. So there are diets that people have for illnesses. Everyone knows, like I said, the cardio diet. It could be low sodium, low fat, in general, and then you have your diabetic diet, renal diet. Now, though, and diets like that, you have no choice. I'm on a gluten-free diet. Let me rephrase that. I'm on a 90% gluten-free diet because as hard as it is for me, I try to do my best to not have any gluten. So I'm pretty much between 90-95% gluten-free. Then you have people, because if you have celiac, you can't have gluten, which is wheat, barley, rye, and like all your pastas, breads, and things like that. But actually, gluten is also, as a preservative, you'll find gluten in everything, literally everything, makeup, lunch meats, junk foods, cereals, seasonings. Everything has gluten, and that's why it's so hard. Then you have your people that are allergic to iodine and seafood and stuff like that. So you're not going to have any iodine or little to no iodine. What's another one? I'm not sure. A low-fat diet, low-fat. We talk about low-fat, low-sodium. I'm trying to think of any other health food diet. I mean, health. Do you guys know of any other health diet? Not the ones I'm going to be talking about.
Yeah, what's that? But what's that? That famous one that was all over the place for years. Starts with an A.
Oh, Atkins diet.
Atkins.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to go over that one. And there's like 10 different, I would say, famous diets.
The biggest one now is keto.
Okay, here we go. Here's the diets for illnesses.
And the Mediterranean.
I'm going to go over all of those. Because here's the thing. Those are selective diets. Anybody could go on those diets. You don't have to have a health problem to go on those diets. So, I mean, we know what's really irritating is the fact that people who are allergic to lactose, and so they can't have any dairy. So that's why they have the almond milk, silk, cashew milk, and all those different types, because of the people who are lactose intolerant. So there's all of that too. But you can also take Lactaid, and it's a pill, and for those who actually like their milk, and it helps, and with digestion of. Even if you drink 1% milk, you're still getting lactose. And the thing with that is you get the stomach bloating, the gas and diarrhea and all the horribleness. So, there's quite a few of these diets. So I'm going to start from the top, and I'm going to skip over some of them because they're not really common. So, if you have acute cholecystitis, which is your gallbladder, an inflammation to your gallbladder, the diet they recommend, nothing. Do not eat. it's to rest your gallbladder. So basically it's just tap fluids, and that's clear, probably clear fluids. And when they tell you clear fluids, I always like to throw in there, but coffee. They're like, is it clear? Well, there's nothing in it, but no, they still don't even want you to drink coffee. Like chicken broth and things like that, okay. And they always, and when they say clear or just fluids, try not to drink purple or red drinks or red jello or purple jello, simply because it can, when it comes out the other end, they may not know if it's blood or not. So that's why they recommend not drinking anything red or eating anything red. If you have an intestinal obstruction, now you could have an obstruction from air. Air can get trapped in your intestines. It's very painful. And those can resolve themselves. So then there's that. Then they have surgery. And you could have scar tissue. You could have food. If you have chronic constipation, sometimes you could get a blockage. Your intestines can actually get twisted. So there's so many different things that can cause an intestinal obstruction. So they recommend NPO, not eating, nothing at all. Sometimes an obstruction can fix itself. Not always. A lot of times they have to go in and do surgery. We're going to go over the renal diets. There's acute renal disease, chronic renal disease. I'm going to go over those two diets here in a minute. Cirrhosis, if you have cirrhosis of the liver, they recommend a low protein, sodium restricted, and fluid restricted diet. A lot of people have, when they have cirrhosis, they have the abdominal swelling. And it's just a buildup of fluid in the abdominal cavity. And it's called ascites. And literally, it sounds like if you know when you thump a watermelon, that sound it makes? Guess what I'm talking about? Yes, no?
Yeah, like thumping.
Maybe
Lauren,
so.
Yeah, like thumping Lauren in
the
head.
The hollow. Yeah, well, okay, fine. Sound it makes, that's what ascites sounds like. I'm not sure if every single time, but for the ones that I've had to take care of those patients, that's what it sounds like. And for cirrhosis, a lot of times you have ascites, they actually have to drain the fluid off. I've seen some patients where we drained a lot of fluid. I mean, like more than a gallon of fluid. The thing is, sometimes it comes right back. And so you're frequently doing it. Because when your abdomen swells, everybody knows if you're heavy, pregnant women, pushes your diaphragm up and you have a hard time breathing, well, that's what happens with those diets. If you're constipated, high fiber and increased fluids. There's stuff like Metamucil, if you want to go that natural route. But watch out for some of those. I'm not sure if it's Metamucil, but there's psyllium in it, and that causes bloating and a lot of gas. So kind of watch out for those things. But, yeah, you just high fiber and increased fluids. Drink a lot of fluids, preferably not caffeine. So, because it's a diuretic, and it'll pull more fluids out, which needs to get in there and soften the poop up so you can get it out. I did not know there was one for this. Dengue hemorrhagic fever. Avoid dark colored foods. I take it that's, I've never heard of that before, but I'm sure they're probably talking about your dark green leafy vegetables, the darker stuff. So diabetes insipidus, they recommend low sodium. But watch out. Remember back in the day when they told grandma and grandpa they can't have salt anymore? And they made Mrs. Dash. The problem with that is it's okay, but it can raise your potassium level because of the ingredients they use. So you got to kind of watch out for that. Remember, potassium is important, but too much can cause serious cardiac problems.
diabetes mellitus. They have diabetic diet or a well-balanced diet. I know pre-diabetes, if you get into that, a lot of people can just cut out your simple carbs, your refined sugars, and all of that, and that, you know, just as long as you're doing a well-balanced diet. And that's what they recommend. Diarrhea, we all know, I'm sure everyone's had that at one point in time in their life. Liquid, low fiber, regular, fluid, and electrolyte replacement. Remember, when you have diarrhea, you could become possibly dehydrated. Once that happens, yes, drink water, but once you get to a, I call it the point of no return, drinking water is not going to help. That's why you get to do the electrolyte replacement. Now they have the electrolyte packets. And so they say Gatorade, Powerade, and all of those, but watch out with those because they have a lot of sugar. Sugar tends to make your diarrhea even worse. So they do make sugar-free, Powerade, Gatorade, and what's the other one? What's that other sports drink besides Powerade and Gatorade? Wasn't there a third one? Do you guys know?
Sport.
I can't remember. Dang gone. What was it called? Adult Pedialyte.
Right. I know what you're talking about, but I want to say something sport.
Because
it's got
that?
The Pedialyte in it.
Yeah. Well, there's Body Armor, too. Body Armor has a lot of different, so the electrolytes and protein, all of that stuff. There's so many different varieties, and they make sugar-free. So, like I said, just watch out for a lot of that. Because, you know, for gallbladder disease, low-fat, calorie-restricted, high-protein. Also, you know, your vegetables. They're like a lot of diets that we're going to talk about. Eat all the vegetables you want. Yeah, not if you have gallbladder disease. I do know this for a fact. For myself, and this is what I was told, green peppers and onions irritate the crap out of your gallbladder. So if you haven't had a gallbladder taken out, try to avoid eating green peppers and onions. I know it sucks, but it just happens. Gastritis. Sure, everyone's had issues with stomach inflammation. A lot of times, like the stomach flu and stuff like that, low fiber, bland diet, or brat diet, bananas, rice, applesauce, and toast. I have chronic gastritis, and I've learned to avoid trigger foods. I modify caffeine. No peppermint, because apparently peppermint irritates your stomach lining if you already have issues with it. Tomato sauces, anything that's high acidic can irritate your stomach. So I just know if you feel it, if you ever had it, the upper portion, like my abdomen, will get really hard and it feels like my stomach's on fire. So that's when I stop eating and I go straight to like I said, the brat diet. It works really well. And sometimes I have to rest my gut for like a day and just have water, tea, or herbal tea, I should say. And I had to cut coffee out for a long time. So, and with gastritis, it's usually, sometimes 3 days at the most. Now, don't get me wrong, you may have gastritis longer. It all depends on you. Gouty arthritis. Or gout, low purine diet. My grandmother had gout, and she was told to stop eating pork. And she said, guess what? Nope, I'm not doing it. She lived in the South, and they had cheese and pork chops and whatever. She just tried to do as lean as possible, and she had it in her foot, on the top of her foot. And it was her thing, and it's one of those things you have to pick and choose. For myself, like with celiac, I'm not supposed to have bread, right? But I love pizza. Yes, they make gluten-free pizza now, which tastes like ass. I'd rather eat cardboard.
How do you know what ass tastes like?
What?
How do you know what ass tastes like?
You know what? I don't, but it's an expression, so shut up.
I bet Lorna does.
But if you know what, it tastes pretty bad. There's no flavor to it, honestly. It does. You just might as well eat cardboard. So basically what I'm saying is I have to pick and choose. It's hot. I'm tired. I don't want to cook. Just order pizza, and I'll have one or two slices of pizza, not giant ones, but small ones. For me, it's just the abdominal swelling and the gas, the diarrhea and the sick of my stomach. How much do you want to suffer? You know what I'm saying? And so you have to pick and choose, except diabetics. That's a whole other nightmare because you got to deal with your insulin and your blood sugars and all that crap. But yeah, every illness has its drawback, and you have to pick and choose. But if you constantly fall off that wagon, you have no one to blame but yourself. So it is what it is. Hepatitis, they want you on a regular, high-calorie, high-protein diet because your liver is not working right. Hyperlipidemia or high cholesterol, which I'm sure everyone around here has high cholesterol. Low sodium, wrong diet. Low-fat, calorie-restricted. You know, honestly, the calorie restricted, I would talk to your dietitian and your doctor before you do any of these, which I'm sure if you have any of these illnesses, they're going to tell you anyway. But the low fat, you know, it's not that hard as you would think. Like eating chicken, okay, don't eat the skin on the chicken. Eat the chicken breast over the dark meat. The dark meat has higher fat content than the light meat does. Your fishes, I do believe that some fish is higher fat, though, but I don't think it's, I'm not sure if it's a bad fat like it would be if it's in beef, pork, or anything like that. Not, I don't remember that off the top of my head. If you have hypertension, high blood pressure, heart failure, coronary artery disease, any of that stuff. Low sodium, fat control diet as well. Low sodium diets really suck. But here's the thing. Look at your junk food, your lunch meats. Look at how much sodium is in your lunch meats. It is astronomical how much sodium is in lunch meat. I stopped eating lunch meat 3 years ago. I don't think I've had lunch. Well, I might have had lunch meat twice, maybe, in the last couple years. I had to give it up. Kidney stones. Increase your fluid intake. Also, I have come to find out that kidney stones, have low vitamin D. So, yay, me, I get to take vitamin D forever and ever and ever. Obesity. Well, we're going to go into all these different diets for obesity, but they recommend calorie-restricted, high fiber. But I remember Phil has talked about the two different calorie scales you have. The resting? Oh, shit. I forgot.
It's your basal metabolic rate.
Yep.
And your total daily energy expenditure.
There you go. But there's other diets that can kind of help. And, you know, I really hate all that counting calories and shit. Increase your calcium. Now, aside from taking calcium, what's the best way naturally to increase your calcium. Milk, dairy products, or is vitamin D gonna be, or calcium going to be the, pretty much the best way to do it?
Lots of alcohol.
The guidelines are specific to postmenopausal females, and supplementation with vitamin D and calcium is recommended.
But I mean, like, taking the vitamins, is that the best way to do it, or can, like, drinking milk, dairy products, can that do it too? Or is-
that can do it, but you have to, you got to monitor the levels, and then you have to do a bone density exam.
Yay.
But specifically postmenopausal females are the highest risk due to the changes of the hormones after menopause.
Oh, okay. Pancreatitis. Low fat, regular. When it says, it's kind of stupid to put regular, because if you're in a regular diet, you really don't have to pay attention. But it's low fat, small, frequent feedings, two feedings, or TPN if you have pancreatitis. But.
And replacing the pancreatic enzymes that are coming out.
Yep. Isn't it, what's it called? I had to take a supplement, an enzyme. Is it pancreatic lipase or? Huh?
Yeah, pancreas. Pancreas?
Yep.
Like pancreatic, but it's pancreas. Anything that ends in ASC is an enzyme, normally. Pancreas, lipase, they're all enzymes.
Yeah, there's, when I was having a lot of issues with my pancreas, because they were like bouncing me back and forth and sending me to every specialist. Well, there's got to be something wrong. And I was taking those capsules, those enzymes, before I ate 3 times a day. And that shit gets expensive. It's $1,000 for 3 bottles.
Ooh.
And I see why the VA took me off of it. They didn't want to pay for it. But come to find out, it wasn't really my pancreas that was the problem. Peptic ulcers, they want you on a bland diet. Pregnancy with hypertension, low salt, high calcium. For strokes, usually, some people may not get back to normal, though, after a stroke. So mechanical, soft, regular, or tube feeding. It's just until you're able to swallow and get back to somewhat normal.
And depending on the blood thinner you're on, you may have to have a diet free of vitamin K.
Oh, that's right. That's very true. Very true. You have lupus. They recommend a low-salt diet. Why? Would you know?
Low sodium with lupus, I don't know the answer to that, but there's some other diets that are recommended for lupus, too. The only thing is low sodium I can think of is because lupus is associated with an autoimmune condition and inflammation that they want to keep your blood pressure controlled, so water retention is going to add to the inflammation,
okay.
But I'm guessing. I don't know the correct answer, though.
Oh, okay.
But for most autoimmune patients, we definitely recommend gluten-free.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I thought, like, celiac and stuff like that was the only reason to do gluten-free. No, my patient that's got lupus, it's wreaking havoc on her whole body. I mean, she's lost 30 pounds and then gained it back. And then she's just got issues all over the place. And so they don't have her on a low-sodium diet.
or any particular diet. So I didn't know why they would do that.
That's probably just the education level of the provider. It depends. See, there's different types of lupus also. There's a systemic lupus. There's a discoid lupus. So it depends on the type of lupus as well.
Oh, okay. Finally, vomiting, replacement of fluid, and electrolytes. So.
Yeah. And diarrhea is definitely. Do you already do that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. You definitely want to avoid dairy, fruit juices, and hydrate. Otherwise, you dehydrate and die.
Yeah. You know, see, someone made a comment, a little diarrhea never hurt anybody. No, they're right. But a lot will kill you.
True. That's true. Yep. And diarrhea is very good. You don't want to stop it because it's your body clearing out toxins. So don't jump on the loperamide or the Imodium right away. Give your body a chance to clear out those toxins. But once that loose stool turns watery and you're going five or six times a day and you have a chapped ass and you're having to use baby wipes now, that's when you got a problem and you're going to need some help. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was just going to ask you. At what point do you wait, to your peeing out your rear end? I mean, to me, that's like, okay, I draw the line at peeing out my rear end. I know it sounds kind of TMI, guys. I'm sorry.
And some of the signs of it, you're going to see the sunken eyes, you're going to see the dry mucous membranes, you're going to see increased turgor of the skin. You pinch the skin and it doesn't go back into shape right away. So those are signs of dehydration as well. And in the elderly, mental status changes is one of the key signs for dehydration and or urinary tract infection as well.
Well, like now, here's this with the vomiting, replace fluid, and electrolytes. Yes, very true. But honestly, when I start getting to the point where I'm nauseous and if I start vomiting, I stop eating. I don't give it any other opportunity to come up. I'd rather go at the other end. I'm a violent hurler. I'm like Linda Blair. So I just cut it off. And I just sip herbal tea, Gatorade, and things like that. I'll just sip it. You never want to chug, especially after you're done vomiting, because all you're going to do is put all of that in, and your stomach is going to be like, no, we don't like it, and you're going to end up vomiting it back up. So just do sips, frequent sips of your electrolyte replacement. Okay, I'm going to save this page because this is pretty cool. I'm going to keep it for work. Okay, so I'm going to go over, this is what they say, I don't know why they say 10 and there's only 9. Hold on a second. Some of these diets I've never heard of. Where's the 10th diet? They lied. There's only 9. So now these diets are for non-medical diets. This section is for, you know, people who have to lose weight or a lifestyle. So the first one is a vegetarian diet. But, okay, never mind. They go into different types. Okay, so a vegetarian diet comprises of fruits, vegetables, and grains. There are lacto-ovo-vegetarians who eat eggs. Ovo-vegetarians who only eat eggs. What? And pescatarians whose main focus is fish. So the three different types of vegetarian, one eats eggs, one doesn't, you know, whatever. Lacto-ovo-vegetarians' protein source contain all 9 essential amino acids, and they can also eat foods with a lower fat content. So, and I love this pescatarian. That's just too funny. Have higher intakes of omega-3 fatty acids, and they do this without raising cholesterol levels and more lean muscle mass every day. So the positives of a vegetarian diet, higher intake of protein, increased fiber in the diet, and a low-fat content. The negative sides of being a vegetarian, they're limited options due to fewer types of food to choose from.
Do you have any other positives or negatives with a vegetarian diet?
Yeah, vitamin deficiencies in a lot of vegetarian diets. And,
okay.
You're going to have that, and you're going to have anemias also, because you're going to have some B12 deficiencies, some folic acid deficiencies. You're going to have some iron deficiencies, depending on the diet, the vegetarian diet. But we have a lot of Middle Easterns, and for religious reasons, they're strictly vegetarian, and a lot of them end up with a different anemias because of their vitamin deficiencies. They also end up with various chronic conditions such as skin issues and osteoporosis and other conditions that are totally reversible. So they end up having to supplement those vitamins that they're not getting through their diet.
Something I heard, I'm not sure which one of these vegan vegetarian diets it was. Don't they have, because it was a girl, she was a vegetarian for years. And she said, vegetarian diets really aren't good for you. She had a chronic brain fog, strictly because of the lack of certain things that she's not getting, you're not getting in your diet.
Yes, yes. You know, it's a number of things, actually, including your calcium and vitamin D, which is really important. You definitely need the B12 for the nerves, the neuropathies. And what a lot of other people don't realize is that the omega-3 is necessary for the production of the myelin that covers nerve fibers. Like an electrical wire, the nerve fiber is covered in an insulation lipid type of material they call myelin, and it needs the omega-3 to form the myelin sheath around the nerve fiber. And with the lack of the vitamin, with the omega-3, nerve fibers become exposed and causes, neurological conditions.
Okay. The second one is a vegan diet. This one sounds, I think she might have been a vegan. A vegan diet excludes all animal protein or animal products from meat, eggs, and dairy. The most common sources of their protein are vegetables like peas, beans, lentils, and other legumes. It can be difficult for vegans to consume enough calories or calcium without supplements. So they also would have to drink or eat fortified foods or supplemental vitamins, which probably means they would not drink protein like Boost or Ensure, because isn't that milk-based?
I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. I was doing something. What was the question?
Boost and Ensure, are those milk-based?
They do have lactose-free, but some of them are, yes.
Okay, because I was just going to say, vegans wouldn't even be able to drink those then if strict vegans, because they can't have dairy products. So the positives of a vegan diet, if there's any, low risk of heart disease, cancer, diabetes. They have increased, I don't believe this though, completely increased energy levels because you're so restricted. But that's also because they have a high fiber consumption. They have more alkaline and pH balance than the average omnivore diet. The negative is difficulty getting essential nutrients like calcium, iron, and B12. So, but I mean, are you honestly going to get enough fiber, though?
You get a lot of fiber in vegetarian diet.
Yeah, but it also depends on how much fiber you eat. That's the other thing. But
yeah,
every
plant has fiber in it.
Okay. Number three is the paleo diet.
it's based on the types of food that would have been available in the Paleolithic times, which includes lean meat, fish, fruit, vegetables, nuts, seeds with no sugar or dairy products. It excludes processed foods like bread and other types of grains. So it's good for weight loss, increased energy level due to high protein, improved long-term health outcomes, including a reduction in heart disease risk factors. The negative side is it's too restrictive. So it can be difficult for those who need many carbs or sugars for endurance activities like running or cycling. So, but with any diet you go on, check with your doctor or your nutritionist before you try any diet. So, and number four, the keto diet. A lot of people love this keto diet. The keto diet is one of the most popular diets for losing weight in a short amount of time. And it's a type of low carbohydrate, high fat eating. It involves drastically reducing your intake of carbs and replacing them with fat to force the body into entering a state called ketosis. When your body is in ketosis, it burns its own stored fat for fuel. Strict keto involves limiting yourself to only 20 to 30 grams of carbs per day, which isn't feasible for every lifestyle. No kidding. Have you read some of the labels on some of the things you eat? I started trying to cut back on certain things, and I was eating like Greek yogurt. Great. Greek yogurt's great, right? And so I was taking some granola. And granola's healthy, right? No, because it's like a whole crap ton of carbs. And I went through looking at a whole aisle of everything. And it's really hard looking for low carbs. So keto diets don't require you to give up sugar entirely, but you must significantly reduce your intake. The best thing about it, weight loss, and it improves your cholesterol level. The negative, of course, is it's too restrictive, very difficult without intense willpower or support from family and friends, since there are no sugar or grains allowed. It may be unsafe if not done properly due to a lack of certain vital nutrients like fiber. So, has anybody tried the keto diet?
Nope.
Huh?
Not me.
Bobby? Yoo-hoo!
Heck no.
That's a hell no for me.
Lord,
I'm not doing it.
All these diets.
You need the diet.
Okay. I have never heard of this diet before. Ever. And no, it's not the seafood diet. It's called a DNA diet. Instead of general diet ideas or recommendations, a DNA diet is specific to an individual. DNA diets make recommendations for an individual's diet based on what is known about the client's DNA. The diet is perfect for people who want to maintain a healthy weight while still eating their favorite foods. For example, fast food or high-calorie snacks that are not on most common types of other diets. The types of foods recommended are according to the understanding of how certain types and combinations of food affect different people based on their DNA. So you got to do genetic testing before you do this diet. Some types might recommend specific food or combinations, while others will exclude them. Some food could be a potential health risk for people with particular genetics. Well, that makes sense. Some positive. It's very customizable, depending on what you want to do for your body type or goals. There's not many negatives about the diet, but one might argue that the cost of the DNA test can be pricey. So that might be a good seafood diet then. You see food, you eat it. Pretty much. Number six, which I've tried. I do have a book on it. The Mediterranean diet. It's supposed to be a really good one. Mediterranean diet is common in various cultures around Southern Europe, Greece, Italy, and Spain. Oh, excuse me. In the Mediterranean diet, eating habits are influenced by those found in these surrounding and Mediterranean Sea. It encourages the consumption of plant-based foods, emphasizing in olive oil and fresh produce. It also limits the intake of animal products, but it doesn't rule them out, which is good. Because don't they eat a lot of lamb, though, in Greece and stuff?
I would imagine.
Yeah, so they can't completely rule them out. The key is consuming small portions as often as possible. See, I could do that. Get to where you eat, like, small little snack-sized meals instead of three times a day. I've done it six times a day. And it's worked. I mean, I lost a lot of weight doing that. Just eat small little things instead of making a plate that, you know, your eyes are bigger than your stomach. And then you end up, one, eating it because you put it on your plate, and then you feel like you're going to explode or end up putting it up or throwing it out. As with most diets, people in the Mediterranean diet would need to avoid refined grains, oils, processed meat, and packaged meat, which, like I said earlier, your processed meat has a lot of sodium, a lot. The positive is a moderate high fiber, moderate diet high in vegetables, healthy fats, and grains. Weight loss results are slow but steady. That's the other thing. You don't want to go and lose a shit ton of weight all at once. It's not good for you. What is it? 2 to 3 pounds a week is okay? Is that the new census now?
I'd tell my patients 3 to 5 pounds a month.
A month?
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, that's changed a lot. Because, I don't know, I was always told 2 to 3 pounds a week is okay. I mean, a lot of it may be water weight. That's the other thing. You know, you'll be on a diet and you'll be, like, shedding, like, wicked weight. Sometimes it's just water. The negative, difficult to maintain due to all the types of food restrictions. Not a good option for those who can't live without bread or cheese. Well, you see, I can live without bread. I cannot live without cheese. That cheese is like coffee. It's a must. But I'm sure I can limit on that. The Atkins diet. I will never do this diet ever. It's also perhaps the most well-known low-carb diet. It involves a restrictive induction phase with limited foods followed by an ongoing adjustment period to help maintain weight loss, that it includes more types of food and carbs gradually introduced into one's daily intake. The goal is to force your body into going from using carbs as its main source for fuel, which will cause you to gain weight due to insulin secretion in response, and instead start burning fat stores at a higher rate. Restrictions may not be feasible for long term. I'm sure you guys have seen all the celebrities on the Atkins diet. They have the special meals like Weight Watchers and all that, and the little boy. Yeah. The foods allowed in the act are meats, eggs, cheese, and other dairy products. The types of foods that are not permitted are bread, any high-carbohydrate vegetable like potatoes or corn, or beans. Yeah, that's a no-go. I still like my potatoes. Sweet potatoes, gold ones, you know, stuff like that. So it promotes rapid weight loss through carbohydrate restriction. Once on a maintenance plan, it offers flexibility type and amounts of food consumed while maintaining ketosis levels. The negative, some people report difficulty continuing the strict requirements long term. It can lead to kidney stones, UTIs, and constipation. That's a no-go for me. I ain't going to do it. Clean eating, this is another big one that I've heard of. The types of foods allowed on the clean eating diet are high fiber, unprocessed carbohydrates like whole grains and fruits. The types of food not permitted are fatty meat, processed sugars like white bread or refined sugar. The types of foods allowed on the clean eating diet are primarily vegetables like your spinach, broccoli, fruit, like strawberries, blueberries, lean protein like skinless chicken breasts or fish fillets. On the fish fillets, try and avoid tilapia. I know it tastes fine, but I guess tilapia is the bottom feeder of fish, unlike catfish, which are literally bottom feeders. I guess tilapia is really not a good fish. But so some of the positives, it promotes weight loss through dietary fiber intake rather than a caloric restriction, which may be easier for some people long term since it doesn't restrict food consumed. Although this type of diet is only sustainable if you consume a lot more calories due to increased portion sizes. The negative, this type of diet is difficult to maintain because it may be hard for some people to find high-fiber foods outside of vegetables and whole grains. So it would be difficult to adhere long-term due to limited options and types of food consumed, which can lead to boredom or poor nutrition if strict guidelines are not maintained properly. Well, shit. Number 9, the Weight Watchers diet. Oh, and the other thing about these diets, like the Atkins diet and the Weight Watchers diet, what's the other one? The other thing like Weight Watchers.
I'm not sure. We used to the Mediterranean diet.
No. It's like Weight Watchers, how you get your prepackaged food.
Jenny Craig.
Weight Watchers.
Jenny Craig, yeah.
That's what it is. I can't do those three particular ones because of some of the preservatives they use in the food. The Weight Watchers always made me sick. So that's why I can't do those diets. But it encourages followers to eat a variety of types and quantities of food in moderation. Basically, that's Weight Watchers in itself. It's all portion controls. And you go by points. They say you have so many points in the morning, in the afternoon, you know, each point. And you have these little cards. It's in a little, like, you put them in a little notebook. And you move the points from one side to the other side. And they got all their little prepackaged foods and all that good BS. The plan assigns points per day for each type of food, which means it's easy to calculate how many calories you've consumed, providing you actually measure out your food. So when they say, just say you can have a steak. Okay, cool, a steak. They mean 3 ounces, not a T-bone steak. So literally you have to weigh your food. And if anybody knows, 3 ounces is about the size of a deck of cards. Or so I've been told. For instance, one slice of bread equals 4 points, depending on your diet goal. If you've had 3 slices at lunch, your total number of daily points has already reached 12 out of 20 of the 24 point limit. It also depends on what bread you eat. Sara Lee makes a bread called 45 Delight. It's 45 calories. And it's whole grain, but it's actually pretty good. Sara Lee seems to be the only bread that I can eat, but I don't eat enough bread to to always buy a whole loaf of bread, or buy a loaf of bread, period. The diet should be easy to follow. Like I said, some people start with the prepackaged meals. Like Jenny Craig and Weight Watchers, you used to have to go to their meetings and get your meals from there. Now Weight Watchers, you can actually buy them in the store. I don't know about Jenny Craig. Are they still where you have to go to the place and get them? Do you guys know?
I don't know.
Lorna? Not that you'd know. No, seriously, you used to have to go to your weekly meetings like AA. Yeah, and so, but Atkins,
what did you want?
Right now you can buy Atkins at Walmart or any grocery store. So
what did you ask me?
The Jenny Craig, can you buy any of their meals in the grocery store, or is that like you have to go to a place and go get them?
God, I don't know. I don't buy that stuff.
I think
you order them online, if I'm not mistaken, but
okay.
I'm not 100% sure. Weight Watchers, I know you can get it in the store.
Yeah, now you can. And the Atkins.
Yeah.
Another good one is Lean Cuisine. Huh?
Jenny Craig, I think that's all order through the company.
Yeah. They
program.
But now, like, if you want to eat some other diet foods, like Lean Cuisine, they're actually pretty good. It's portion controlled and all of that. But yet, the thing is, you have to watch how much sodium is in those meals. That's the only drawback. Some of those may have a lot of sodium in them. So... I think that's pretty much it on diets. Hold on. We have something else. There's one we missed. A few of these we've missed. I got to find it on different things. The intermittent fasting. Hold on a second. Come on. My internet has to catch up. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, no. I guess I'm not going to look it up. The intermittent fasting, where you could only eat at certain times.
I do that, but not by choice.
Yeah, I know. See, that's just it. Some jobs, you only get so much time. Like medical field, you're lucky if you get to eat once a day. But, yeah, the intermittent fasting is you can only eat between like breakfast, we'll just say from 7 to 8. You can eat, but it has to be between 7 and 8. Lunch, 12 to 11 to 1, 12, whatever. I mean, and that's what, like, the intermittent fasting is. A lot of people do that. They say it works for them. With me, because of what I do, I drive all day. I'm lucky if I'll wake up and have coffee for breakfast. I may or may not even eat breakfast, which is usually, and I started buying the yogurt cups, the Greek yogurt, and I might eat one of those. I might not even eat again until dinner time. That's like serious intermittent fasting. And so I don't know if there's a reason for doing it like that, but, and there's no real restrictions with that. The other one I want to look up, because my daughter wanted me to try it, and I'm like, hell no, and I'm not doing it. And that's what's it called? The 30, hold on a second. It's a special diet. You got to cut out all dairy food. If I can remember, dang gone it.
I can't remember what that diet's called. It's called 30-something, but you have to actually cut up, like, no dairy at all. And no refined sugars, none of that stuff. And you reintroduce things slowly. But I can't do it because I can't get rid of my coffee creamer and things like that. I just can't do it. What are some other diets we haven't gone over?
Renal?
Well, we did go over. Well, I didn't actually go over what's in a renal diet. Over the ones. Well, we didn't go over them. I just said what they were. But, the renal diet. Okay, top 7 renal diet tips. Okay, let's go with this. Okay, so. Okay, so. For the fruit, apples, I hate the internet. I may not be able to tell you. Okay, apples without skin, apricots, blueberries, grapes, red or green, peaches, pears, Asian pears, pineapple, plums, raspberries, strawberries, and watermelon. And then for vegetables, asparagus, red cabbage, cauliflower, celery, which is the devil's food. Sorry, I ain't eating it. Garlic, lettuce, iceberg lettuce, which I don't know why they would put iceberg lettuce, because that's pretty much the most useless food. It's pretty much all water, like watermelon. Mushrooms, onion, parsley, radishes, mung beans. For proteins, your fish and your chicken and tofu. And then they have a bunch of other miscellaneous things like flaxseed oil, hummus, popcorn, if it's air pop, sea salt, olive oil, olives, horseradish. They're just a bunch of miscellaneous things. So that's what they think. Those are foods that you can eat. Now, jump in anytime, Phil, if you want, with anything I'm missing here. So, unfortunately, the tips that for foods to avoid, there are simply foods that are downright bad for your kidneys, and these need to be removed from your renal diet. Red meat. Oh, seriously, why is red meat bad for renal diet?
Yeah, I'm listening. I'm sorry, huh? What?
Why is red meat bad for a renal diet?
High protein.
Oh. Okay. So you got to be in a low-protein diet? On a renal diet?
Yes. Yeah, you want low protein because your kidneys is what actually breaks down the protein, because urea is a protein. Well, protein is broken down into urea, and let me correct myself. Protein is broken down into uric acid. And uric acid is further broken down by an enzyme into urea, which is known as urine. If you have an impairment of that enzyme, that protein will be broken down into uric acid and cause gout. It won't make the conversion to the urea. So by having a high protein diet, the protein will be broken down into urine, causing you to use your kidneys a lot more, because that's where that's where that reaction occurs, is in the kidneys.
So wouldn't peanut butter be another food to avoid, or not a lot of it?
Well, peanuts have high protein. Yeah, there's protein in peanuts. Yep, and there's carbohydrates in peanut butter. In peanut butter, it's high carbohydrate. In peanuts, there is protein, but not as high of a carbohydrate source. So a diabetic becomes hypoglycemic, low sugar. We go ahead and give them a half of a peanut butter sandwich, about 15 grams of carbohydrates, and it brings their sugar back up.
Oh, okay. So you don't have to avoid it altogether, just kind of limit how much peanut butter then, right?
Well, correct. But it also sort of depends on, I mean, on the degree of your renal function. I mean, if you're on dialysis.
Oh, true.
Yeah, if you're on dialysis, you want to have a low-protein diet and as much as possible. So if you don't have to eat it, don't eat it.
Oh, okay. Well, also, I know, when people on dialysis, they do have a fluid restriction on how much fluid they can have, period.
Well, it's the same thing, because the more fluids that you get, the more work your kidneys are going to do. And if your kidneys aren't working and you're not making urine, all of that is going to build up. You're going to retain fluid, and all of those poisons of the body trying to make something out of it is going to start building up in your system, and you're going to become toxic. Not just from plain water, but from fluids.
Yeah, because there's different health conditions. Like if you have congestive heart failure, you're going to be on a fluid-restricted diet, most likely. And you have to count everything, water, coffee, tea, broth, any liquid you ingest, you have to count it. Now, some are more restrictive than others. I've got patients who can only have 3 bottles of water a day, period. Or the little 8-ounce bottles. That's it. That's all they're allowed to have. So, and that's got to be hard. So dairy, it says to avoid milk, butter, cream, ice cream, yogurt, pre-made products containing dairy. They also recommend a gluten-free diet. Like your wheat, rye, barley, spelt, kamut, oats. Well, that sucks. Oatmeal? So safe gluten-free grains, though, like rice, corn, amaranth, millet, quinoa. Is it quinoa? Quinoa? Or actually, you pronounce it. And buckwheat. They want you to avoid high-processed foods and sugar. So probably the most well-known of all renal dietary guidelines is to make sure your consumption of potassium, phosphorus, and protein and sodium are within normal healthy limits. Unfortunately, normal healthy limits between individuals can vary greatly. So what my normal and what your normal is can be two different things. So that's why they always check your renal panels and all of that when they do all the lab work. And that's why you need a trained nutritionist, also a renal doctor, to give you the best diet. And the first thing to note is a lot of people fail to mention is that not everybody needs to rigidly adhere, monitor, and calculate their daily potassium, phosphorus, protein, and sodium. There's the different stages of renal failure. One is the lowest, right? Yeah, 1, 2, then 3A, 3B, and stage 4. Is there 5 stages or 4?
It's 5. In renal failure. There's 5 stages, but there's a subpart A and B of like stage 3.
Yeah, stage 3 is stage 3 A and B, and that goes by
your GFR.
GFR.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now,
yeah,
what's really weird?
Less than 30, you go see the nephrologist. Less than 15, you're on dialysis, most likely.
Well, here's what's weird. I have 2 renal patients, right? One, their GFR, she's a stage 3A. Her GFR is 30 or 39. She's 3A. So her renal her thing is 39, right? this woman has issues. If she drinks too much water, she can't pee. She don't drink. I mean, she's gone. She's all over the place. Then I have another one. His GFR, I kid you not, is 8. 8.
Well.
But he still pees. A lot.
Yeah, well, now, keep this in mind. GFR is an estimate. It's estimated.
Yeah.
And it's estimated, and it's based upon a calculation. There's a specific way to calculate GFR, but it's very difficult. So what, you know, some person might be calculating at an 8, but there may be other factors involved.
He was dropping his creatinine is like crap. But they say he's dropping 3 points every time they check it. It was like 12, and he was dropping like 3 every time they do a blood test every month or two, whatever it was. He said, no, I don't want dialysis. I'm done. I've lived a good life. I'm ready to go. And he's been kicking for a year at 8. I don't know what his creatinine was. Oh, here it is. So stages 1 to 2 is a GFR from 60 to 90. 3 to 4 is a GFR of 20 to 60. And stage 4 and 5 is a GFR of 5 to 20. So, and then they have at the different stages, they recommend for the phosphorus and things like that. But yeah, he could drink. This man could. He's a medical marvel, and we call him a freak of nature. It was what we joke about it. He could drink a lot of water, and he's gonna pee it all out. So
yeah,
like I said,
well,
he's just different.
Yeah, medicine's not an exact science, right?
Nope, not at all. We got plenty of time to go over the cardiac diet, and we'll do that.
Well, yeah, in the hospital, mainly we have renal diet, cardiac diet, and we have diabetic diet. Those are the main diets for hospitalized patients. And then, you know, there's also, you know, religious reasons and other, you know, the vegetarian, the vegan, and all those other diets. But those are a personal choice. And you get in the hospital,
yeah,
your doctor will decide on your diet, whether you get a regular diet or one of those special diets. And it sucks because you will not get what you want unless somebody sneaks it into you.
Yeah. You know what's hard is they don't have a gluten-free diet in the hospital. The best they can do is a cardiac diet.
Depends on the hospital. That is like a
true.
You know, hospitals are run by board of directors and businesses, and so it depends on the hospital. But there are diets for those who have celiac and other issues available in the hospitals. And it's listed as other, and so it has to be listed as a special diet. It's not a routine.
I mean, because you get. Now, I don't know how every hospital is, but you usually get a choice of foods. And look, if there's pasta, I don't get it. I mean, as simple as that. You don't pick the bread, and you don't pick the pasta. Pretty much settles it right there.
Yeah, they send you a menu to your room, and you select the next day or your diet based upon the menu selection of the foods that they're going to make for that day, unless your doctor has ordered a special diet. So you can get a selection of food, but if your doctor said a low carbohydrate diet or a diabetic diet, you're not going to get pasta.
Oh, no. But like on a regular diet, or they'll give you a regular diet, and then you just pick, you know, well, I'm not going to eat the bread or the pasta, you know.
Yeah. So, but you are what you eat. If you guys remember that from when we were kids, Mom used to tell us, you are what you eat. That means you must be full of shit, boy.
Yeah.
My kids now are very, very selective, picky eaters because parents won't sit there and make them eat. They'd rather just give the kid what it wants and let it shut up. Did I lose
the
you?
Thing about that, though, with picky eaters,
uh-huh.
Oh, I'm going to get hiccups. Yeah. Hold on. The one thing that I've learned from my kids when they were little, one, never, ever, ever, ever say, ew, I'm not eating that. Because if your child's never had it, and dad says, ew, that kid's not going to eat it. They don't care. That could be the best tasting thing in the whole entire world. That kid's not to eat it because somebody said, ew, I'm not eating it.
Yep.
So,
well, what I found out, too, even with my 11-year-old that I have now, he is a very, very picky eater. He would only eat certain things. And no matter how much you try to encourage him to eat a variety of things, he wouldn't. He would refuse. You could tell him to sit there until you eat something or you're not getting up. He would sit there. You would tell him, then you're not going to watch TV or play your game. You're just going to go to your room. Until he would go do it. He would be so defiant and refuse to eat. You know when he started eating a variety of food? When he started going to school and hanging around with other kids and watching what they were doing.
Yeah.
That was weird. You see another kid that loves eating a hot dog, he'd be all over the hot dog. So my concern with that, though, is that during their formative years, if they're not getting a good, healthy diet, there could be a long-term sequela of that. So you have to supplement those children who are very picky eaters with vitamins and minerals. Along
they do
with
make
whatever
shakes for children.
Yeah, they make the boost puddings and the shake.
Well,
and they also make the what?
No, it's a shake. It's a red can. It's called something essential. There's four cans or six cans to a box. The only problem is it's like $10 a box. And that's for kids that are very that need the extra vitamins.
Yeah,
something
they,
else I used to do. I had to rename foods.
Yep.
My kids would not eat broccoli. Would not eat broccoli. I'd call them trees. You want trees for dinner? Yeah, sure. We'll have trees. If you called it broccoli, they were not eating it. I know it's not always a go-to thing. Put cheese on it. You know, you don't have to drown it in cheese, but or shredded cheese, but just enough for them to taste the cheese and kind of, you know. My youngest would not eat hamburgers. You'd have to call them a Krabby Patty because that's when SpongeBob came out. And she would not eat anything unless you called it a Krabby Patty. I don't care what it was. Wasn't going to touch it. And the thing I noticed with them is, I would introduce them, okay, I'll take two bites of this. Give it a try. Take two bites. And we would swap out food. It did work for the longest time. And then, like with the green vegetables, like spinach, kale, and all of that stuff, no, they wouldn't even touch it. Now, my two oldest love their green leafy vegetables. They absolutely love them. So you have to let them experience their own taste.
Well, and here's the other thing. Even as they're growing and even adults, about every 3 years, your taste changes. Meaning what you might not like today, 3 years from now, you might love. But if you are not encouraged to continue trying a variety of foods and being educated that, hey, You might not like it now, but don't give up on it because maybe one day you will.
It also is a lot of times how you prepare the food. My youngest, at Christmas time last year, last year was the first time I've seen her since she was 9 years old. She's 25. All right, she is the pickiest freaking eater on the planet. She would not eat sweet potatoes. Oh, I ain't eating that crap. I'm like, just try. But the difference is how I prepared them. And she was amazed. You have to give food a chance. You know, she'll eat corn, you know, English peas. She won't eat lima beans or anything like that. She'll eat English peas, and that's it. So she's very hard to get to eat. So, but yeah, like when I make sweet potatoes at the holiday, I add a little bit of brown sugar, and I add a little bit of vanilla extract, and I usually will buy, and something new that I started trying is, you know those, how broth comes in those little cardboard containers? They have butternut squash and that. And I will take a little bit of that and add to it. And it helps to, and it, she absolutely loved it. So it's something new that she's been introduced to. So, but here's the other thing. If you don't know how to make it, you're not going to make it. So,
true. And that's another issue, you know, that I have with the elderly and the, at home and in the nursing homes is they start becoming where their diet does not change, and they end up losing their appetite. Everything, they don't want to eat it because it's the same thing every day. And encouraging the caretakers of those elderly people, whether it be their younger children or a younger sibling or you know, someone else, to change the diet, give them a variety of foods, because just like children, their taste will also change about every 3 years. And they're pretty much all laid back and nothing affects them or grouchy or whatever, but you know, they're just going to say, I'm not hungry. They don't even realize that it's just that the food doesn't have any taste to them anymore. So they're not realizing changing the variety of the food would actually improve the appetite of an elderly person.
Well, and not to mention their taste changes in the sense where sweet foods is the last things that really go. Like when it gets to like really close to the end of life, like the last year, they'll eat more sweet tasting foods. And I'm not saying necessarily junk food, but like your banana pudding, anything with a sweeter fruits and things like that, applesauce, puddings, they'll eat those more. And like your savory foods will go right before that. But like anything else, they're like, it just doesn't taste right. And that's what I noticed.
A lot of it has to do with cerebral atrophy, and you have atrophy of the hypoglossal nerve and the glossal nerve, and you have atrophy of olfactory nerve. So the sense of taste and smell aren't as good as it used to be, just for that fact, the natural part of aging. And so bitter, salty, sweet, different areas of the tongue, different parts of your tongue is where the different tastes are. You'll taste salty in one part of the tongue or sweet on another part and bitter on another part of the tongue. And, you know, with elderly people, a lot of times they, you know, taking medications that dry out their mouth, or they're taking, they're dehydrated, they don't drink enough fluids. So the papilla on the tongue also become atrophic, and they end up with a geographic tongue that doesn't really have a very good sense of taste because the taste buds in the tongue they're not working right. So there's a lot to the elderly as far as their taste and their appetite go. But once again, providing them with a variety of choices is a lot better than making them bland oatmeal every day, because the fiber keeps them regular, and they're diabetic, and they're, you know, they can't have a carbohydrate, and you know, this and that. So those diets get pretty shitty after a while.
I've got one lady, that's all she eats is oatmeal. One bowl of oatmeal for breakfast. They put peanut butter in it. That is the only thing she will eat. They have tried everything. Also, texture of food. Some textures of food, here's the other thing. Think about it when you're sick. Like when you have a sinus infection, any type of, if you can't smell food, you're not going to want to eat it. Taste it. You're not going to want to eat it.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Think about being in dentures or not having good teeth or having ill-fitting dentures.
That's a big
certain textures either because of that.
If it doesn't smell good, if it's not appetizing, if it doesn't look appealing, you're not going to eat it. No, it doesn't matter what your age is. And that's why it goes to, like you were saying, offer different things. Offer it a different way to encourage it. You know,
well, like the child psychology that you were talking about, there is also geriatric psychology as well. Make it fun,
yep.
You know. Maybe even.
We don't have to worry about the airplane.
You know, my grandmother used to drive us out to a little picnic area. On the right, on the side of the road, what they call them rest areas now, but they used to have these little picnic areas on the side of the road. And my grandmother made it a routine of doing that once in a while, which changed her normal routine, and she actually encouraged her to eat. So changing the normal routine of things helps in those cases.
And the other thing is, this is especially with children. You know what? Honestly, it works with the elderly, too. When I say elderly, I mean those that are having to have serious issues of not eating and things like that. You can't let them, and I hate to say this, kids can be obstinate. I mean, they could be like, absolutely refuse. You do need to set boundaries, though. Or if not, they're not going to eat, they'll get sick and die. That's the problem. So you have to set some boundaries. Okay, I'll give you this if you eat this. You know, and honestly, some people think it's, oh, you're bribing your family member. Call it what you want. But they're still eating. You know, you don't have to overdo it. So, but yeah, there are parents that'll, like this one commercial I saw on TV, how it's a French fry commercial. The parents will say, like, I'll give you 3 French fries if you eat this vegetable. And it's like, okay, you know, you gotta have a play on food sometimes to get your kids to eat or your elderly family members to eat.
Do you have a crawfish boil to go?
So that's pretty much it on diet. Unless anybody else can think of something else.
But it's the boil, right? Yeah.
Bobby?
Huh? Cajun?
Bobby?
Yes. Yes.
Hey, Bobby, remember on the East Coast sauerkraut?
You want to talk a what?
Oh, Phil, sorry. 956?
Unless you can think of any other diet thing or questions or whatever, let us know. We'll try and answer.
Whoa. I have no clue.
You just have a seafood diet, right? You eat it?
Well, Phil, I remember growing up on the... Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So I remember growing up on the East Coast, and as a teenager, I hated sauerkraut. And then when I went back as an adult, when I was in the Navy in South Philly, I had a hot dog with sauerkraut, and I fell in love with it. I was like, wow.
Oh, yeah. I used to hate asparagus and Brussels sprouts. Oh, my God. I can't get enough of asparagus. I love that shit. Brussels sprouts, too. It depends on how – and you know what part of the problem is? People will boil the crap out of it, and that takes all the flavor out. I don't boil asparagus. I will never boil asparagus. Never.
Hell no. You lose a lot of your vitamins out of vegetables if you don't steam them. Vegetables maintain their vitamins by steaming versus boiling. You're actually boiling a lot of it out.
Yeah,
and then, same thing with rice. The brown rice is the healthy rice because the white rice is actually bleached, and so it bleaches out a lot of the nutrients from the rice. And that's why the wild rice or the brown rice is much healthier.
Now, where does jasmine rice fit into the scheme of things? I know jasmine's better than white rice, but is jasmine considered a white rice, or is it considered
wild rice? I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not familiar with it.
Jasmine rice has a nutty smell. It's a nutty. I can't explain it. If you go to some Chinese restaurants, they do white rice. Some do jasmine rice. There's a big difference in the smell and the flavor. That's why I was wondering if jasmine would be considered under the wild rice or other types.
Healthy rice, yeah. I'd probably have to Google that.
But, you know, for me, I want a rice cooker. And that's how I do mine. And I rinse all that excess starch off and then cook it. But, yeah, jasmine rice has a really awesome smell. And it fills the whole house up, and it smells, oh, my God, it's amazing. I never realized that. I got 80 pounds of white rice. I'll keep it till Christ comes back because we were back, you know, when COVID first hit and they were not having a whole lot of food, we were putting stuff up until I realized jasmine rice. So I got 80 pounds of white rice.
Like you were saying too, Colonel, like the preparation is real important because I've had, red snapper made one place and delicious, tender, doesn't taste like fish. Then I've had it at another place and it's real fishy and real nasty. And the same thing, deer meat, you know, marinating and preparing deer meat is an art. And sometimes that deer meat can taste excellent. But sometimes it just tastes so wild that you can't even palate it. So.
Yeah, it's that gamey taste. It just
– Yep.
And sometimes, and also, if your food is like rubber, it's like, you know, it's like leather, you can't – and it goes for anybody, even a healthy person. They're not going to touch it. But like with asparagus, I would put mine in a frying pan and just – add a little bit of water, and I will steam it, grill it, kind of like that. And I add lemon pepper, and it's absolutely, oh, my gosh, completely different. And
do you want to know something else funny? I thought this was funny when I was in school. Our professor told us in the United States we have the highest rate of osteoporosis on the planet. Because they believe it's because we drink pasteurized cow's milk. Like countries that drink goat milk or lamb or sheep milk from other animals other than the cow have very low rates of osteoporosis. And he goes, why do you think that is? Yeah, he goes, why do you think that is? And everybody's like, oh, it must be a much leaner, healthier, milk. And the answer is because first of all, they're smaller countries, and they don't do the studies with the same amount of people as we're doing. So if you consider the ratio, they probably have just as much osteoporosis as anyone else.
I was going to say, what is the pasteurized? I mean, to pasteurize milk is just to cut the bacteria and everything out, right?
I guess it's some sort of sterilizing process. I'm not sure exactly what it means. But I know that they do have unpasteurized, like, cheeses, and they do have some unpasteurized milk, because there's issues. They're thinking about antibiotics and in the meats, and antibiotics in the milks, and so who
knows?
But
that's why the Amish don't pasteurize their milk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's why they were going after those farmers, because they were selling unpasteurized milk.
Uh-huh. How long do those Amish people live? What's the average lifespan? I wonder.
I don't know.
Yeah, me neither.
I really don't know. You know, honestly, if it wasn't for some of their crazy shit that they do, it would be the best type of living to have. I mean, there are some issues with the Amish that's a whole other subject matter. But the simple lifestyle that they have, the things that they teach with making candles and the food and all of that, it's a pure, you know, that's great. But I don't know what their lifespan is. I really don't. It's got to be up there, though.
Yeah, I wonder if it's higher than the average American. I'm curious, because of the lifestyle. I think it would be less. Because they don't do the vaccines, and they have a limited gene pool as far as who they're having intercourse with. And I'm sure that they have a lot of genetic abnormalities amongst them and non-viable ones as well. I mean, I have a lot of patients I get from Guatemala, a lot of kids. They're polydactyl. They have like six toes and six or seven fingers because of genetic limitations in the gene pool, because, you know, cousins are doing cousins, and everyone's related to everybody in these small communities in like these small countries.
Oh, yeah. So their lifespan is about 72 years.
That's about the same as the average American, then.
Yeah.
Maybe
that's
a little bit less.
Some.
I don't know what. They say the lifespan has actually lowered since COVID hit, but I think it's because of the way statistics are calculated.
Because
COVID killed off a lot of the Medicare patients.
Yeah, but here's the thing about the Amish. It said back in the early 1900s, the average lifespan was 47.
That's
the difference. But they have an active lifestyle, fewer obese people, and type 2 diabetics are very, very low. They don't smoke. Or they do, but not as much. Might be pure tobacco. Aging in place. I guess it's because they don't send them off to nursing homes to die. So,
yeah, and I think some of the longest living I think some of the longest living people on the planet are those vegetarians, such as found in certain parts of India and China. I think that they're the ones who are living the longest because of their genetics and their diets. But like I said, some of their diets also cause metabolic disturbances. So yeah, it just all depends.
Oh, yeah. Let me see. Hold on a second. Let me see what culture has the longest
Lifespan.
Well, this has Andorra and the mountainous regions between France and Spain. There's a valley in Ecuador. Some of the Himalayas and Pakistan. Southern China, Japan, Singapore, Italy, Hong Kong, Australia, Switzerland, and Sweden. Sweden is the highest, Southern China has the highest at 82 years, but I do have patients that have been in their 90s. I had one that was 104 who just passed away, you know. But you're right, it has a lot to do with their food, and you got to think of the population, pollution and all of that crap.
Yep.
That's the thing. Huh?
I think stress is one of the number one killers.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. Stress kills you quicker than anything. So, all right, Bobby, we got 3 minutes.
Thank you.
All righty. I'm glad that y'all were on here. And again, Kimmy, thank you again for another great show.
No problem.
God bless America. God bless our children, the missing, our veterans, first responders, our military. And God bless you, December 7th. Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
God bless you all. Bye.